You seek the key, but first you must learn the ways of precision, craft, and performance with Acura's all-electric ZDX. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system, up to a 313-mile range, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is their most powerful SUV yet. Unlock the energy when you visit Acura.com to order yours today.
At the UPS Store, we know things can get busy this upcoming holiday. You can count on us to be open and ready to help with any packing and shipping or anything else you might need.
Is there anything you can't do?
Actually, I don't have a good singing voice. The UPS... Nope. But our certified packing experts can pack and ship just about anything.
At least that's good.
The UPS Store. Be unstoppable. Most locations are independently owned. Product, services, pricing, and hours of operation may vary. See center for details. Come in today to get your holiday goodies there on time.
This isn't your average business podcast, and he's not your average host. This is the James Altucher Show on the Choose Yourself Network. Today on the James Altucher Show.
I do one thing, man. I take data and I find patterns, right? However I can tailor that and use that.
People don't realize, I think, how much data is being collected. Like, in your adventures in data, what's the most unusual pattern that you've ever seen that you thought, I did not expect that? I did not see that coming.
Well, I mean, this probably doesn't answer your question. I think a little bit more on that. But I always try to break patterns. Always try to break patterns. Like, oh man, I'm going to this place every Tuesday. I need to stop. I need to go somewhere else.
But that's because of your knowledge that everybody is doing things in
right.
a routine. But that's kind of an interesting, just an exercise in general, like change your routine every day and discover the world.
But you know what I find out? I find out that I'm changing that pattern like every third Thursday. you know what I mean? Just like, I'm like, oh no, it's another pattern. I'm like, I'm a pattern individual.
You know what I mean? So no matter what, you're still like stuck in pattern mode.
Yeah, I mean,
and like, everybody is. Am I rolling?
Yeah, I'm rolling. That's where it's nice.
I love it.
Can we start rolling again?
Sorry. In line between being friendly and being a little loud.
Yeah, I'm loud.
Okay. Just kidding. Okay, now it's my phone. So happy to have one of my good friends, Eddie Ibanez, on the show. Eddie, welcome.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
Most people will not know who you are, so I'm going to describe. You are probably the biggest cybersecurity expert slash hacker I know. I have a technical background myself, but it does not rival yours. You're formally, I will describe it as, how would you describe it? You describe it. What you formally have done for the government.
I was part of a team that was contracted to help find patterns.
And can you say what sort of patterns?
Yeah, the patterns were really just to understand behaviors in people who would potentially be a threat to, you know, certain things in the nation.
So like what would be... If you don't mind, we can move on to the next topic. We'll move on from topic to topic, and it'll all be interesting. But like, what's a pattern that you programmed up that discovered a potential threat to the country?
Sure. I'll scale it back a little bit. There's these things called these methamphetamine labs, right? And they consumption of power is a pretty easy one, right? Someone has a meth lab, right? They open up. How do we crack these things, right? Well, peak power consumption for a certain house and in a certain neighborhood, those things like quadruple when you run in a meth lab all night.
And I would think that's obvious. Like the utility company would notice that.
Well, I mean,
and swoop in.
But that's why like merging of data, right, helps, because then you can, okay, cool. Now I have the data set from this utility company. Cool. My utility company goal is to maximize, you know, like uptime and maximize.
So they're happy with the methamphetamine lab there. They're making more money.
I'm not saying that. I'm not going to go out and say that. But you're making money. They're not as, they didn't care as much.
So how did you end up with their data?
A lot of that data on grids, especially, is public, right? So, I mean, everything that was done was above board.
When you say public, it's not like published in the newspaper, though. Like, how did you get the data?
You know, there's different ways to get data, and we use one of them.
When you say different ways, is that in quotes or can we?
That's in quotes. Yeah,
okay.
That's in quotes. Which
brings to mind though, like you know, all of these companies, utility companies, banks, Google, you know, social media companies, they all have data that's useful for other things than their business model, than their perceived business model. How much does the government have to try to get the data, and how much do these companies essentially offer the data when there are issues or potential problems?
It's not like, you know, back in the day, there's a whole idea of censorship where like, oh man, Big Brother, you're thinking back to Orwell 1984 and stuff like that. There's like, oh, the government's gonna tap in. Dude, these days, I mean, you don't even have to be the government to get people's data, right? We're volunteering it up. Like, just so I can download and play a game with my friend for free, or just because I want to know which celebrity I look the most like, right? I'm offering my face, which is my password for some certain devices, right? Just to find out, oh, hey, I kind of look like, you know, like Brad Pitt, which I do. I'm the Hispanic version, right? But, like that type of stuff, right? I mean, data is being volunteered up. And, the key thing that I tell my children is like, they're young, right? But I still tell one of them, don't put anything on the internet that you're okay with, like, being public, right?
But like, people don't realize, like you just said, it seems neat. Oh, I can unlock my phone with my face. That has a benefit, which is that nobody can steal my phone and see my data. But you're giving up a valuable piece of data right there, is your face. And
because how does that work? It's polygon recognition.
Yeah,
right.
But the assumption is that the phone company's not going to share that with anybody.
Yeah, or the device maker and whatnot, right? But you're sharing it when you want to find out, like. Like, you share it with your social, like, Facebook owns your face.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They own.
Yeah, you constantly get messages like, oh, you might have been tagged in a photo because their facial recognition software is doing anything. But now how does the government use this to identify threats, for instance?
I don't know how they use it. I'm not saying they do, right? I'm saying if anyone wanted to, if anything's publicly available, right, which, like, if your profile is publicly available and I can search that, I can use that just like I could any other picture for any other type of recognition that I want to save and store.
So this reminds me, and I've described this story before to the people in this room, but I got this email the other day. Google must be doing this experimental program and I just randomly got selected. But I got this email the other day from Google where they're announcing this great new benefit to me. But it came across as a little bit creepy. So they said, it was February 1st, and they said, here's an email from Google Maps. We thought you might like to reminisce about all the places you've been in January. And they show me a calendar. First off, they show me a map, and there's red dots in every single place I've been in January. And then they show me a calendar, and I click on every single day, and like January 2nd, 7:10 a.m., leaves home, goes to Irving Farm Coffee, 450 feet, 10:10 a.m. goes back home, 2:10 p.m. goes to stand up New York, 5:10 p.m. goes. So they knew every single location I've been in for every minute. Like, there was not a single minute that they missed for the entire month. I checked every day. And there was more in there too, which I'll describe in a second, but they obviously think this is a benefit and a feature. But my first reaction is, and I think most people's reaction would be, is that's a little creepy.
Well, you volunteered that data up, man. Like, somewhere you said, like, hey, I like using Google Maps and, like, because I need to go to point A to point B.
But I didn't know, like, when I think the normal inclination is, oh, I'm going to search something on Google Maps. I don't necessarily think that they're just keeping track of that for me. I mean, I guess it's an obvious thing to think, but I don't think that. And then the other thing is, they knew what my home was. I only tell Uber that. So Uber and Google must be sharing all the data.
Or they're saying, hey, this guy goes here, and his time zone is EST, and he's here from 10 to 5 a.m., like over 80% of nights or 60% of nights. So we're going to guess that that's home.
I see. And then the other thing they did was, which was also creepy, but in a different way, is they told me other pieces of interesting data, like, oh, you've walked 10 miles in the month of January. And I was saying this actually on front of a stage, and I was acting like, you know, not that I'm bragging too much that I walk so much. But then when I broke it down, 10 miles for the month of January, it's like I walked only 300 feet a day. You know, like, I'm basically a lazy sack of shit, you know, and that's what Google was telling me. And it's almost
in
like
nicer terms.
It's almost
nicer,
like,
nicer keywords, they told you that.
It's almost like they were going to bribe me. Like, if you don't send us $1,000, we're going to put this on the front page of Google, or we're going to email this to all your friends. People don't realize, I think, how much data is being collected. Like, in your adventures in data, what's sort of the odder pieces of data you've seen collected about people?
Odder pieces of data that I've seen collected about people. I mean, like, we kind of joked about this earlier at lunch. Like, there was a, when we were doing a marketing campaign for a company, and it was an email send, right? There was a, it was a male product, right? And so we were targeting men. And like, in their time zones, right, there was something like around like, it was like 3:30, it like 3:45 to 4, right? That like, there's a clear segment that it just would open, right? The response rate, right? And they open and they would stay on it for a while, right? And the click-through rates were great. And then we sent out a survey, right, to see what's going on. And like, you know, some guys lied. But like, I guess it's, I don't know if this is true, like, but for that area, right, I mean, that's when guys went to the restroom.
Between 3:30 and 3:45, yeah, and they're taking their phone and they're on the toilet and they're looking and they're responding to.
Yeah, they're opening buying up clothes and they're responding to the product, right? Yeah.
I mean, so that's interesting. And, you know, we were talking about at another time how to hack a home and you could determine if someone's cheating.
Yeah.
And so I just want to throw this at you. This is not a computer hacking technique, but here's how I can tell in a large location if people are cheating. So let's say you're in Grand Central, the big train station in New York City. If it's 5 p.m. and I see two people kissing, but then going to different trains, I assume they're cheating. Because otherwise, because they've left work and they're on their way home, but they're kissing romantically, then why are they going home on separate trains?
Yeah, I mean, that's fair. I mean, they could be dating.
They could be dating, but then why not go on a date? Or why, you know,
yeah,
like why not, whose house are we sleeping over tonight if they're kind of at that romantic level? So anyway, that's my theory. But for, let's say now we're going deeper. If you were to basically hack a home, A, what does that mean? Like, is there ways to hack Alexa? Would you hack a laundry machine? Would you hack Nest? Would you hack, you know, the thermometer? Would you hack a coffee maker?
Yeah, and like, it goes back to, I'd always hack the router, right? See their packet streams, what's going through.
So just to explain, the router, like if I'm watching a streaming video on my TV screen, it's getting the internet, not straight from the internet, but there's something in between the internet and the TV or the computer, which is called a router. Every home has a router
right
in it, like in that little closet where all the buttons are.
Yeah, you don't look at it unless it breaks.
Like Verizon installs it. You're just like, thank God they installed it,
right,
and you forget about it.
Right.
And so why is a router hackable as opposed to some of these other things?
Because a lot of them are standard, right? A lot of people don't update them, right? Or like look at how much security you put on a cellular device, right? Or like your computer, how much security is on your router. You just trust someone, right? But all your information is being flowed through it.
Right,
everything I'm doing emails, at home, all my email, like all my packets are going through that one little piece of plastic, metal, and silicon.
And are there standard ways to A, figure out what's the router for XYZ house and then reassembling those packets
With the advent of now, like you said, like Time Warner and these people, yeah, because they like to buy standardized equipment, right? It was actually a little bit harder when, you know, you're buying your own, you had to set up your own, like you're buying your own Linksys, you go to Best Buy. I mean, but now like they're becoming pretty standard, right? And that's kind of like part of the issue is this technology is standard, right? Like most of the companies out there are on Cisco and whatnot, right? So if you think about it, if everything's standard and there's one hole, right? And it's not a hole for everyone, right? But if there's a hole and like, and you know, they haven't updated it, their router in forever, then yeah, you can get in.
And how would you get in?
Well, there's a few different methods. But let's just say, I was able to expose something that let me into their router, right? And then I'm getting the packet streams. And then to find out if someone's cheating, right? And to get in there and to see that, right? Think about, do you have one of these like home alarm systems?
No.
No, but I imagine a lot of people do, right?
Yeah.
And what's cool about that type of stuff is think of what you're giving up just to secure your home. Right, I'm giving up how often I go in my living room, right, with the sensors, right? I'm giving up when I come in, when I come out, when my garage door opens, when my garage door closes.
So the living room one is because when I go in the living room, I might change the temperature?
Yeah, you may, no, the sensor hits, right? Because the sensor is like that thing knows when you're in the room, right? Because if the alarm's on, right? So it knows that type of stuff, right? So let's say I never go into, I don't know, like let's say my, you know, let's say the map pattern, like let's think of someone's map, like they know your home because you're here, right? Let's say and they know when you're at work too, right? Because there's another place I go to from like 9 to 5, right? So let's say on a frequency, I'm coming home, right? And then so garage door opens at like, I don't know, I'm making this up, James, right? But like garage door opens at noon or like 12:15 or 1:15, right? Comes in, right? And then like, let's say immediately bedroom gets used, right? Right, bedroom gets used 30-35 minutes, right? And I don't know, like I'm using this example to like make a picture in people's minds, right? And then immediately leaves garage, like, you know, garage door opens back up, out. Could be grabbing stuff, could just be picking something up, right? And that happens in a repeated pattern, right? And then you know, we're creatures of habit, right? So if you're doing, when you find nefarious individuals, when they find a way in a pattern that has worked, they'll usually stick to that. When they find a way in, they usually keep going that way. And they usually don't randomize the way in. Like, oh, this is safe, I'm gonna keep doing this, right? So you think of that. I'm not saying that cheating is nefarious, it's your own moral obligation or anything like that, right? So that's one way.
And so in that case, are you more interested in getting access to the data of the home security company or going directly into home security, hacking the home?
Well, home security company, right? If, like, I don't know if you remember, like, if you bought those cheap, I'm not knocking Chinese, everything's Chinese, right, these days, right? But you buy these cheap Chinese cameras, right? They left a port open, right? And then if that port leads me access to hit it, right? So they left the port open. Anyone who had this cheap Chinese camera, right, you could, like, view their camera.
So just to describe, so basically every device on the internet you could think of as a list of ports, and computers talk to each other through the internet, one port talking to another. So the web, HTTP, that's like one computer talking to port 80 of another computer. SMTP had its own port. And like, let's say back in the 90s,
IP
everything was open.
Yeah.
Nobody was secure. But now everything's pretty secure.
It is.
But you're saying, like, for instance, every
now and
then.
You're trying to save a buck, right? You're trying to save a buck, and, like, I want, oh man, I'm going to save $100 on that camera. I'm going to buy it on Alipay or something like that.
But how would you know whose camera was who? Like, or would you just
scan? You necessarily wouldn't, but, like, if I knew, well, I mean, you kind of would because you'd have to have their IP address, right? If I had your IP in the port.
Of that camera, though, not of the home.
Correct.
Right. So. Well, could you just, you would know the block of IP addresses for, let's say, all the cameras. And so you could scan down all the cameras as an example.
You could. It's not an easy job. You know what I mean? It's like, and that's why a lot of these things, when you're, are best to be just be done, like sometimes the old school way, right? You go in, you leave a trace, you get out, and you just make sure like the batteries, the hardest thing is to make sure the batteries and those things are get updated.
What do you mean you go in and leave a trace?
You go in and leave a device. Oh man, I'm talking about something else. You would go in and leave a device that, like, let's say if you were going to bug a room, right?
Yeah.
You'd go in and you'd leave a bug in there, right? And the hardest thing about, like, leaving a bug, right, is them finding it or switching the batteries out. That's like the biggest problem.
Yeah. And so I'm curious what led to the story of, like, I'm thinking of something different. We won't go down there. So what's other things that you've been involved in where there were results from you doing things with data?
Oh, sure. I mean, in like nerdy ways, right? Some of the things we've been able to do. Well, we've helped frequent flyer programs grow, and that's really just, and that stuff's awesome because you're taking the right product and finding the right person and most times giving them the right price for that product, right? So that's cool because then you're kind of like helping the business, but you're helping the individual who wants to consume and you're just kind of matching.
Because you're using, what are you saying? You're saying this person at this time is likely to respond to this offer using frequent flyers.
Right. So or like, hey, people who work, and we kind of talked about this, so I'm going to keep on it. People who work at a certain company or they're a certain level of a certain company in a certain area code. So let's say people in, I don't know, like Las Vegas, it's probably a bad example. People in Las Vegas who are at a VP level tend to fly a lot, right? Those are the people you want to hit for business class. And they would, business class, you get more rewards and points. You get to skip the line, all that type of stuff. So to get them in the program's free, right? So hit them and market them so that way they know, hey, you're missing out on all these benefits.
And how would you find the data of this list of Las Vegas high rollers?
You could, anything that's publicly available. First, I would understand from the current data I have, hey, it seems like this segment is real, like something about Vegas business people, right? And then hit what's publicly available. Like, there's like business is kind of easy because when you give your stuff to corporate exchange, somehow it gets out, right? Through Spokio, or if you've left a your name on a PR article, you know, like, you know, James Aldrich, your VP of X, right? Contact information.
But how would you know I was in Las Vegas at some point?
I'd map back. Like, so at least LinkedIn, for example. Oh, cool. He works for X, which is headquartered in Vegas. It's you wouldn't know. A lot of cases, 80% is what you need to know. He's got an 80% shot to be a match.
So, can we talk about the sabermetric stuff?
Oh, sure. Yeah,
so, can you have a Super Bowl ring, right?
Yeah.
Do you have it on you?
No, I don't. But we that's just fun, man. I love helping. So, like, football, like, so you're talking about.
This is like your passion project.
Yeah.
You don't even like.
No,
you do this for fun.
Yeah. We do this one for fun, right? And in football, it's much different sport than baseball, right? Because in baseball, you have a one to one relationship with the pitcher and a hitter, right? And that relationship counts. And what else counts is my on base percentage. But this one little relationship we have right here gets me on base. Now I need another good relationship, right? And then I push, right? And then push all the way till they get to home. Right, so that's why that on base thing counts. Football, man, I have like 11 guys against another 11 guys. Right, then I'm not just hitting; I have other means of execution. Right, I can pass, I can run, I can sneak, and so it's a lot different.
Also, you can play a huge defensive game.
Yeah,
and just and forget about
that's
offense.
On the other side. Right, yeah. I'm just talking offense. Right, and defense, and then there's different matchups. Right, so if this guy's faster than me, right, does that mean how much separation am I going to get from him? So what we've been trying to do is we've really been calculating two things, right? One, how much is a player worth and what's the optimal team? If you could choose like all different sizes, right? What's an optimal team? And then once you have the optimal team, what's the optimal group of people? And if you think about the old finance things, it's just I'm trying to cluster, like if you think of stocks and creating a portfolio, I'm creating a portfolio of players and I'm just trying to say, hey, who gives me the best risk-adjusted return to win, right? Now you're going to have some stocks, right, who are like big bets, and if they win, you win big. But you have a higher chance of losing.
Or so you look for expected value, like in the stock sense.
Exactly, right? And you want to be in that mid to high range, right? Still safe. And then that could be a collection of like this wide receiver, this quarterback, this running back, this defensive end. This is a good cluster where we think we could win. And then that changes by the team I face too. That cluster may change. And then
so given that a team has already picked their players, right, and you're working with the players they have, given the team and the lineup that the team is putting against and that they're playing against, you can use software or your particular software to figure out what's the highest risk-adjusted return that you could put out on the field.
Right. So exactly. But then, yes. But then there's another facet of fatigue that really happens in football, right, with exertion. So then I have to – that bundle of players changes live based off also their fatigue, right? So this so they have these RFID chips, right? It's provided by Zebra Technologies. And then
– they put them on the shoulders and the helmet?
They put them on the shoulders, right? I don't know about the helmet. And then I believe they do. Right, and I think this past year there may have been one in the ball, and then you can track where they go and where they move and how much they've exerted. Right, so if like think about like I'll put myself on the spot. Right, if I run like 15 yards straight, I'm not as good in performance if you just got me like warm, just not run around because I'm like, right, I'm gonna be tired. Right, same thing with an athlete. Right, they run 80 yards right straight and have gotten two hits, they may be a little more tired, may have more fatigue. Right,
I walk up the stairs. I'm out.
Yeah, like that, right? So then, and then like football's cool because like it's just starting to change. But like if you think about baseball, like what's one of the most important positions in baseball? Right? Pitcher, right?
Yeah.
They switch out pitchers based off different things, right? In football, you don't really switch out the quarterback. But if you had a quarterback who's always converting on third down, even if he's not your starter, right? I mean, that's one interesting play. And I mean, look, I'm not the football guru, but I'm just looking at math, and math would say, right, for certain teams that you may want to just alternate quarterbacks given scenarios.
Quarterbacks like in between, like a series in between. What do you call it? Like when you're going from first down to fourth down, like one.
That's a down.
Yeah, one set of downs.
Yeah,
you might switch out quarterbacks.
Yeah.
Mid set of downs.
Yeah.
Mid down.
Yeah.
What's another type of play? You might get a wide receiver out if a new defensive person is up against him, and you see that this guy's fatigued.
Yeah, or you may call a different play, right? Mm-hmm. So if you know, like, and that's another variable, like of where you're at on the field, given what time, like what the score is, given the weather, given how much time's left in the game.
So let's say it's fourth down, and
fourth down, you should go for it.
You always. Let's say you're 20 yards away.
Like over 73% of the time, it wins, right? And that's better than a coin toss.
And then can you call, given certain scenarios, can you call one play versus another? Let's say you're fourth and five.
Where am I on the field?
Hmm?
Where am I on the field?
20 yards.
20, all right, so I'm posing 20.
And you're going for the touchdown.
Going for the touchdown. Yeah, it depends on my team, my stack, right? But like if I were to take team stacks away, if you just look at the high-level summary, right, you should go for it.
And okay, you did this for, can you say the team?
Right now we are working with a different team, right? Which is the Miami Dolphins.
All right, but a prior team has won the Super Bowl.
Yes.
And gave you a ring to honor you for your efforts.
Correct.
And it seems like there's a business there where so many people are into like fantasy football teams. You could be a service where you could help people make very contradictory or unobvious picks for their fantasy football teams. People would want to subscribe to that service.
Absolutely. I mean, I want to do it for real football teams too, right? But I think people could pay. This is just really about winning, man.
I know, because for you as a passion project, where I want to riff on all the business plans. You can also do a booking service. So you can basically, if the Las Vegas book is saying, these guys are going to win over, 6-5 chance, that's the line. That's the betting line.
Right.
You can actually look for arbitrages. Actually, given that this is the weather and given that these are the lineups of the two teams starting, it's really more like, 7-4.
What I would find, you're right. And what I find interesting is more like I would rather give people the opportunity to bet by down.
Mm. Right? But you can do that right in Las Vegas.
Oh, can you?
I don't know. So.
I don't bet.
I don't know either for sure. But Steve, can you bet by down?
Yeah, betting is legalized now.
Yeah, it's legal. You can do all sorts of prop bets.
Oh, so you can bet like, hey, he's going to pass it.
Yeah, they have a million different kinds of prop bets at the Super Bowl.
You can do this quarterback's going to throw 100 yards.
Saying, yeah, who would be the MVP? There's a million bets like that, but yes.
Oh, that's awesome.
So MVPs for the game is an interesting one. If you can bet on that, because you know in the beginning of every game
that they're going to throw
who the highest risk-adjusted return player is.
Well, that or you know who they're opposing to. You know they're going to pass more, right? And who are they going to pass to, right? Oh, it's Edelman or Gronk, right? And then, that was probably easy.
Degenerates are out there.
Because there are hedge funds that do horse betting based on similar type of things, but then it's just the factors are just who's the horse, who are all the horses, who's the jockey, and what are the conditions of the track. So it's not that many factors. But football, like you say, there's many more complicated factors. It seems like you could set up a hedge fund based on just this style of betting.
Yeah, if that market's out there. I didn't know. So can you even bet on by pitch? Like, is this going to be a strike? This is going to be a hit?
Oh, wow. Again, probably.
I mean, man.
I've seen the board.
That'd be awesome.
I don't know sports, but I've seen the board for football, and it's like amazing the number of possible bets you can make on every play.
Because I would like to... I think it'd be cool if I'm watching a baseball game, right? Because, I mean, there's a lot of baseball games, right? So I don't watch as many of them. But I would love to say, like, all right, cool, I'm going to put a bet out there. I'm going to bet $20 that he's going to strike. This could be a strike. And I'd love for someone to just take that bet in real time.
Yeah, and you're talking...
Tough one, right? Because the players can control it more readily, right?
Strategically. But he'll know he can bet strategically. The thing is, using the data, he knows when strategically they're going to make that decision.
Right.
So... But
I think it'd be fun.
What's more interesting to me, though, you're talking at just straight 50-50, like the line being 50-50.
Right.
But you can also arb when you're likely to lose, but the bet is still good. And if you're making like hundreds of bets like that, even if you're likely to lose,
you can come up.
Yeah, if the odds are against you, but you know that the actual line in Vegas is different than your odds, you could bet, you could arbitrage, you could bet against the line in Vegas, and overall, over hundreds or thousands of bets, you'll come out a winner.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's basically how, like, stock market.
That's it. It's pretty much like puts, right? That's hedging.
Yeah, that's how, if you were doing data, what are the options that are most mispriced compared to what Wall Street thinks the value should be? So, So what other things are happening? What's the country doing with data right now?
It feels like the country's making apps with data. All right, that's what I feel like the country's doing.
What do you mean?
Everybody. I mean, I feel like as a country, we're just look. I like physics, man, and I feel like in the 1930s, the best and brightest minds were solving like physics problems.
And now they're making flashlights that
now they're making apps. You know what I mean? Not to say that's not cool.
But like, what kind of apps? Is the government making like a flashlight app and pretending to be a company and then getting popular on iTunes?
No, I think the government's just serving the people correctly, and they're just creating apps to make the DMV better and stuff like that.
What do you mean to make what better?
DMV, stuff like that. The government's just helping out.
And so how do you think, like you know, all the data that, or all the news that suggests that the Russians maybe manipulated data. We had a podcast recently about how Russians manipulated data on Facebook. Do you think the U.S. is getting a little bit more aggressive and other countries doing what other countries might have done to us?
I don't know, but I would say that it's probably turning more, instead of defensive, right? I bet they're getting more offensive.
How would we get a more offensive?
I mean, there's so
you could say pass if you
no, don't. No. A lot of people have been talking about electrical grids. Uh-huh. Right? A lot of people have been, I mean, look, that's the way war should go. If it's like no killing, no mass genocides, just hack each other. Right? So, I mean, that could cause way more distress to, like, if you pull down like Wall Street for a day or something like that.
Right. But those are like Wall Street, I feel, is a case where security, like every bank, every exchange.
Yeah, those guys are safe. They're out the wazoo.
But like electric grids in other countries, like third world countries.
May not be.
Right. Because they still might have all the same weaknesses that were around in the 90s.
Or 70s.
Yeah. Yes, it's totally true. Airbnb has changed my life. If anything, they have made my life so much better. Like, I used to live in Airbnbs. I lived in over 100 or 200 different Airbnbs over a 3-year period, and I loved it. I became a really good guest of Airbnbs, and I got to know lots of hosts. So when I initially owned a house, the first thing I thought was, I'm going to turn my house into an Airbnb because I travel a lot. So why leave my house unused when I can make a side income by letting others Airbnb my house or come to stay in my house as guests? And having my own Airbnb or being a host for Airbnb has allowed me to do just that. And I've met other hosts. I've actually spoken at Airbnb's host conference. I think it was in 2017. I met so many just nice hosts. It's a great community. And I love, you know, turning my own home into an Airbnb. Like, I'm traveling to Austin next month. My home's going to be an Airbnb while I'm away, and I'll stay in an Airbnb. I'd rather stay in like a 3-story house Airbnb than in one tiny hotel room in the middle of Austin during South by Southwest. So listen, while you're away, your home could be an Airbnb. Many people host on Airbnb, but there are people who are just letting their house sit empty, who've never thought about it or didn't realize their space could be an Airbnb. Hosting can easily fit into your lifestyle and is a great way to earn some extra money. So if you have a home, but you're not always at home, then you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host. I remember last year I was asked to go speak at the Norway Business Summit, and I was so excited because side by side with the Business Summit was the Norway Chess Summit, where I would get to see in person Magnus Carlsen, the best chess player ever, playing chess. But it was 4 plane rides, like, to get to the city that ultimately I would go to. So I really did not want to fly for 14 hours, and they were willing to pay for everything for me. So I at first class. So I didn't want to fly for 14 hours and not be first class. So I had to hurry up and get on the phone immediately to get those first class tickets to a chess tournament in Norway. And listen, this is just like when, you know, you have to know when you want the best of anything, you have to act quickly or someone else will get it instead. And I did not want those seats to fill up. So it's like if you're hiring for your business, you want to find the most talented people for your open roles before the competition scoops them up. I just was talking to a friend this morning where he was trying to decide between some programmers and he waited a little too long. And both the programmers he was interviewing took other jobs, like great jobs. So, you know, what's the best way then to hire the best as quickly as possible? ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast. And right now, you can try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/James. Just try it and see. You'll find out. So ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify the top talent for your roles. Immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. And I know this because one time I signed up as an employee, potential employee on ZipRecruiter, and I got nonstop, really, I was, even though obviously I wasn't looking for a job, I love what I do, but I just wanted to see what would happen because they were a sponsor of my podcast. And the most interesting jobs would pop up in my emails like, hey, you're qualified for this or that. And so it's interesting to see. So just go there and try it. Try ZipRecruiter.com/James. Amp up your hiring performance. Now, this is more for if you're hiring, but amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/James. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/James. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
At the UPS store, we know things can get busy this upcoming holiday. You can count on us to be open and ready to help with any packing and shipping or anything else you might need.
Is there anything you can't do?
Actually, I don't have a good singing voice. The UPS... Nope. But our certified packing experts can pack and ship just about anything.
At least that's good.
The UPS store. Be unstoppable. Most locations are independently owned. Product, services, pricing, and hours of operation may vary. See center for details. Come in today to get your holiday goodies there on time.
You know, like what's crazy? The computer system isn't. This is an interesting fact I learned the other day. You know, the body of an airplane is like 80 years lifetime or something like that. I had no idea.
How old are most airplanes?
I don't know. I mean, I'm like, you're telling me the life. I was talking to a pilot. I'm walking on. I'm like, oh man, cool. How old is he? He's like, oh man, these things a lifetime, 70, 80 years. I'm like, that's not cool. I mean, maybe it's cool. He was saying it looks cool. Like, oh, it lasts forever. I'm like, they refab those things. It's probably not.
But bridges, though, I think the lifetime of a bridge is like 50 or 60 years, and most of them are now 70 years old. So bridges are in trouble.
So if you think of this, like that's infrastructure, right? That, and I've heard also like water pipes that are underground. Like I guess those things haven't been touched in a long time.
Yeah. So what other stuff do you personally like to use big data for? Like, so football is a fascinating one, and it's interesting that that was sort of wide open. So the level of what's a couple of factors there? Baseball has been used for, let's say, 20 years,
right?
But the data, because the factors are smaller. Like you say, there's a pitcher, there's a hitter.
On base percentage.
But football, a lot more, like maybe 10x the complexity.
It's a team sport. Baseball is a team sport, but football is like a team, like play-by-play sport.
And what other areas interest you in terms of using data that are unobvious to people?
I think oceanic data, right? So we've helped out a great company called OSearch. And if you've seen Shark Week, right? Speaking of sharks that we were talking about earlier. So, Chris and those guys, they tag the sharks, right? They're that big boat that goes out and tags them, right? And we've helped them in developing their shark tracker. And then so if you go to osurfs.org, you can track these sharks and ping, right? We've helped them, well, we've developed that. And it, that's fun because like you get a ton of data back. You get like depths, right? You get the oxygen levels. There's so much, like, and I look, do I know what it's used for? No, but what's interesting, why I like about it is like, I don't really know a lot about, like when I talk to oceanic experts, I mean, they all say the same thing, but it's never really like deep. Like, I mean, I feel like there isn't as to the future of the ocean. Like they tell me all about it now, but like as to the future of the ocean, like, oh, well, who knows, climate change. I'm like, it's always like a high level answer. And then, so I'm just wondering, like, you know, we have this race to the moon and like life on Mars and stuff like that. I go a little more old school Jacques Cousteau-y and like, what about life under water?
And you think what are you thinking?
I don't know. I mean, like, I really want to understand what's down there and seeing if this data can, like, you know, the first efficacy is this data. You can track, like, tuna patterns and stuff like that because, like, you know, sharks go or to eat and, like, can, like help, like, understand, like, how much fish we'll have and stuff like that. The basics, right? But I don't know. I just wonder if there's a way to live down there that's easier to adapt than we may think, like, than living in a bubble.
Oh, that's interesting. I never thought of that. What about, let's say... you know, natural resources like gold or oil. In what ways do you think data, obviously data is being used to identify spots where there might be some natural resource, but do you think people aren't using it as well as they could, or it could be better?
I think it could be better. I think when it comes to energy, right, I think that goes back to like, you know, the 1930s when people were like worried about that a lot. Like I think they still are. You can understand consumption patterns and like where to distribute and how to find them. They use data a lot to understand like where like, you know, geothermal stuff, like understand like where to put the drill and stuff like that. I think understanding more on a molecular level, gravity.
What do you mean?
So, I mean, look, yeah, this, look at that. There's energy holding this damn table, right? There's energy holding that light thing, right? There's energy holding this stuff together, right? If you think about an atom, right, what do I have? I have things spinning, right? If I could just take the force of that thing spinning, right, and its multiplying effect, right, I think there may be something there. And like, I don't know enough, right? And I've been researching this on the side, like how to harness this. You need like these super magnets to harness like that type of energy. But if you think of the splitting of the atom, you've heard of that?
Yeah.
Right? Compress the atom, splits, and it makes this like exothermic reaction, which like is awesome energy, right? But it's also very nasty because it's inefficient, right? Right? But like that same, I'm like, what if I just like cool it off a little bit, right? And then you have a cold fusion talk. But what if I was just to understand the pattern, right, in the data and like how to take this energy, which I think is gravity, that's holding, that's moving these subatomic particles together, right? That there might be enough energy that's holding this table together to like light up a street.
Is it gravity though at that level?
I don't know.
I think it's like there's
they say charge. So there's a guy named Paul Dirac, right?
Yeah.
Paul Dirac was a man. And he's, like I say, I always go back to 1933 because that's when he won the Nobel Prize, right? Love that dude, right? Him, he shared with this guy named Schrodinger. And then he came up with, you know, like this theory of antimatter, right? Which, you know, they play around in the movies, that Star Trek movie, antimatter kills everything, right? But like there's these charges and these effects, right? And that's what really is moving stuff, charge and effect. But like, I mean, look at like, I just think of like in a simplistic level, right? You take those two butt ends of a magnet and, you know what I mean? There's something there, right? Now there's a magnetic bond. That's why I think it goes back to magnets. And that's what keeps there's something that keeps us at the center of our little universe. And I think it all deals with this gravity. And I don't have the data to understand it.
How would you get data for that?
Man, dude, if you could answer that, dude, like I'd run with you.
So given your background, you've done so many things that we haven't even talked about on this podcast with data on every level, from personal to professional to countrywide.
Right.
How would someone kind of, this seems like a valuable area to get comfortable with, both as a user, a consumer, and even for a career. Like, how would someone kind of go about training themselves to become a data expert?
Oh, sure.
Because you can't learn it in school because they're already behind in school.
Everything's online these days, right? I'd go ahead and find some, like we talked about, I'd find something I'm passionate in that's data related, right? So whether it's stocks, gambling, something, get something that's going to hook your time. Right. So once my time's hooked, then I would go ahead and like MIT has a great open courseware that I just look at that stuff for fun, dude. It's just awesome. Right. There's basic elements of math you want to learn. But if you're just data crunching in the beginning, right, start out with some project you have and find out how the data is formatted. Right. And then go research that database. And then learn about it, like, and then like just play with it, like query a bit and like, hey, this is how I return this, as I return this.
So like, for instance, there's all this data from all these sources, and let's say you're trying to find, back to the beginning of what you said, you're trying to find a criminal or someone who's potentially a criminal or someone who's potentially a terrorist or some other kind of threat. How would you start thinking about what data do I need, and then how do I put it together in such a way that I find something statistically significant enough where I could point a finger and I say, there's something no good happening here?
It's a good question because there's two, people do it two ways. One, they take all the data and then they boil it to try to find the pattern, right? I always tell people, create the model as if you had perfect data, right? And then, because that gets you to think about like what's out there and then the math involved of like, okay, all right, so what do we have? If I understood, I need a little bit of data to understand, like, all right, cool, what's the pattern, right? But then, all right, people who probably have nefarious activity, they may move around a lot, they may switch their phones a lot, right? So I may see a ton of different phone numbers churning, right? Okay, cool, I do that. Then, all right, now what else do I need? Like, so I take that, I need location, right, to understand if they're moving a lot. Are they in places that we deem bad, right? Okay, cool, got geolocation.
Or are they moving from good to bad?
Yeah, or good to bad, right? Or you know, like the best ones move from good to good.
Right.
Right. You just don't know it. Understanding that pattern and then taking that and then seeing if who they're calling, right? Like, are they calling other people in certain frequencies? Like, or are they, like, are there, or if they're, if you're trying to fake something, you're not really putting that much into it. You're making a call and hanging up, that type of stuff.
So doesn't the like agencies like the NSA already do that? So they're already tracking phone data trees.
Imagine they do everything. That's what I do, right? Mm-hmm. But if you got nothing to hide, then it doesn't matter.
That's what people always say. Do you think that's true?
Yeah, I think
like
that's
if true. I have nothing to hide, I still am. Do I need to be worried about like, you know, Google or Facebook or the government kind of still taking advantage of the information somehow to manipulate my opinion or influence my buying habits?
I think you always need to be worried about that, right? You need to be your own data police.
Do you think Google might be more in cahoots with the government than we think?
No.
Like the government has to make a request and then Google decides whether or not to abide by that request.
By law, they have to on certain requests.
By law, okay. I'll put that in quotes.
By law, they have to.
And
You know what? Someone told me this, and I don't know if it's true. Just find out. I don't know if it's true. Maybe research if you care. I'd love to know. Who were some of the big funders in the early days of Google? And then where those guys got their money from?
Well, you look at like the CIA's venture arm, InQtel. They funded Palantir. How much does Palantir, of course, their biggest clients are banks, but they're funded by, and they look at all the bank transactions to see who might be interesting.
Follow the money.
Yeah. So how much does the government kind of check out bank transactions to see what funny things could be happening?
I'd follow the money. If anything's done, it's probably, I always think it's been done in the best interest of the people.
Yeah. But then let's look at the reverse. Obviously, every corporation in America is being attacked. How much do you think we're infiltrated by bad actors in this operation?
All time.
Let's say the average company, like Procter & Gamble, would you say there's like bot armies infested in every computer?
I would say there are people attacking them, for sure.
Constantly,
all day. And they know it too.
And how much, like what would you do? Like, well, you would do what? If you were trying to hack into a Procter & Gamble, what would you do?
I'd just take their data. You know what I mean? I just do a swipe. And this,
how would you do that?
There's a lot you can learn off of what they give out on their website. Like a ton of stuff, right? I mean, hey, look, anything you search for on your website that you see is information that's being passed through you, right? And if your sign-in password, cool, it's encrypted. Not everybody can see that response, right? But anything that's out there that's public, like think about your Facebook account, right? If I can search for it and look at it publicly, dude, the world's got it. Eddie can scrape it. Eddie probably already has it.
So given that, like, here's another idea for you. You should set up a hedge fund where you given someone's Facebook, someone's degree, someone's grades, you could place bets on their future income, meaning you could exchange with them. You could say to them, hey, I'll give you $100,000 now. You have zero in the bank. I'll pay off all your student loans if I have 10% of all your future income.
Yeah.
You can make bets like that.
That is a great bet.
You could use statistics and AI to
understand, like, hey, cool, art history major. I don't know, someone going to dental school from this. Yeah, absolutely.
And then you go get their Facebook, like this is the type of Facebook.
Yeah, and you'd also understand like maybe like that graduating school, like there's like South Dakota when they were having that shale boom. I guess those kids were making like $1.50 coming out of school just because there was so much demand right there.
Right.
There's a different market influence.
So it's interesting. Like
I would bet on kids for sure.
Yeah, that's and I think the football hedge fund betting, and I think a service where you give people like fantasy football picks,
yeah,
you know, given their teams or the teams in their league or whatever. It seems like there's so many businesses that are like out there now that one can start using data, not ethical ones, not the other stuff like.
Of course.
Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah, not just the hacking kind of stuff.
You know what? I would almost take bets on like cybersecurity insurance is probably something I'd like to offer.
Oh, yeah. What's that? Tell me.
Hey. Cool. Let's say you had a product or something like that, or I can even just guess on you. If you get hacked, we'll insure you up to this.
But then does that give me any incentive to be less careful about my security?
I don't know. Are you any less incented in your accident insurance?
No, but that affects my physical health.
Yeah, I mean, this affects your creditor score. Right?
Yeah, which, yeah, you're right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. That's an interesting one. What other kinds of insurance?
Insurance is great because it's just math. You know what I mean? At the end of the day, I'm like, there's no hard asset except money. So like if you have a group, like if I know that I'm going to bet like your life, you know what I mean? Life insurance is awesome.
Oh, well, you know what? Here's an idea.
Tell me.
Given that you know so much about the football stats for each team and given football teams make estimates on how much they're going to fill stadiums and sell advertising against their shows, obviously the better the team does, the more likely they are to fill out stadiums and sell advertising and charge higher for the advertising. You could sell football teams insurance based on their estimates versus your estimates of how much money they're going to make based on how well they're going to do.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point. A lot of those teams sell out.
No matter what.
Yeah. I mean, even if they're not full, like the tickets are sold.
But I wonder about the advertising too.
Yeah, that's
true. And merchandise, stuff like that.
Well, I was kind of thinking about like, we're talking about like kids like that too, right? Like if you come out of a law degree and you think you're going to make $1.80, right? You could take out insurance, right? And we have a product and it's EIC. And then you take a bet like, no, you know what? I think I'm going to cover you from that you're going to make 160. But you come out and like, let's say the job market sucks or you can't find a job and you end up making 80, you know, we cover the spread.
How much do you charge for that?
It's a premium that's built in. I believe it's roughly like 5% of the overall.
So like 5% of...
Yeah, but it gets wrapped into your loan.
I see.
It gets wrapped into your student loan.
That's interesting. So you're in that business right now. What other kinds of... You do lots of things. So what other kinds of business?
No, I do one thing, man. I take data and I find patterns, right? However I can tailor that and use that. Yeah, we try to.
So final thing, what's the most unusual pattern that you've ever seen that you thought, I did not expect that. I did not see that coming. Or what's the most unusual type of pattern you did not see coming?
Well, I mean, I don't know. This probably doesn't answer your question. I think a little bit more on that. But I always try to break patterns. Always try to break patterns. Like, oh, man, I'm going to this place every Tuesday. I need to stop. I need to go. I need to go somewhere else.
But that's because of your knowledge of that everybody is doing things in
right.
a routine.
But then
but that's kind of an interesting way of just an exercise in general, like change your routine every day and discover the world.
But you know what I find out? I find out that I'm changing that pattern like every third Thursday.
Ah.
You know what I mean? Just like, I'm like, oh no, it's another pattern. You know? I'm like, I'm a pattern individual.
You know, see, I mean? So no matter what, you're still like stuck in pattern mode.
Yeah, I mean,
and like, everybody is.
Yeah, and then look, you think about the rabbit hole and you just get like schizophrenic after a little.
That's funny. What else have you discovered? Like, you obviously, football is your passion. What if elections were your passion?
If elections were my passion,
what if I wanted to win for Congress? What should I do?
Be a good politician, right?
But that's rare.
Okay, sure. Let's say if you wanted not to win Congress, you wanted to manipulate or something like that, like Manchurian candidate style, you'd probably go ahead and understand which demographic you need to hit, which you already don't have under control, right? So who you need to make off the spread. Once you get that information, right? And you just look at the demographic. Luckily, you're bound by who is allowed to vote for you, right? Given that election. So then I would take that and find those people on the net who are giving up public information, right? So people within the, you know, lat longs of this certain polygon of area in which constituents can vote for you. And after that, I'd go ahead and hit their public profiles that are close or similar to those types of people. And, you know, you could say like, hey, let's say in like, I don't know, you live close to the Gulf or something like that. And you wanted to, a lot of people, like, let's say a big segment of users, that you found like Blackfish, love SeaWorld, subscribe to Animal Planet or something like that, right? And it's in their likes and their public profiles, like, oh, I like this. These are my favorite movies, like, I don't know, some Free Willy and all that type of stuff. You know, and that was a big enough group or cluster to switch a vote, you know what I mean? And they, you know, they may not agree with some of your other policies, but then you'd market them, right? Versus a lot of the advertising platforms that are out there and advertisement. And that's kind of like, oh, hey, I'm saving the ocean. And here's my...
You just bombard them with like, I'm the save the ocean candidate.
Yeah.
And no one else is seeing that.
Yeah, no one else is doing that, right? Well, I'm not going to say that's what I would do. But like, and you make that boilerplate so you can flow out the words and stuff like that. So like the same thing, ocean could be like the same email goes out. It could be like, I don't know, like say rabbits and stuff like that. You know what I mean? Like the same like...
James. Lower taxes.
Yeah. I mean, everybody does that one. But I'm like more on a personalized level because then what you're doing is you're hooking them, and the right word used is manipulating people to believe in that, right? That's what I would do.
So, Eddie Ibanez, I would not want to bet against you on pretty much anything. If you were gonna place a bet, chances are I want to be betting on the same side. If you do start a hedge fund, I'm investing in it.
Thanks.
Are you allowed to say what football team you're working for?
Yeah, Miami Dolphins.
So next season?
Yes.
Or next year or whatever.
Yep.
And you're already working with them now?
Yeah.
So they're giving you all the data from the sensors, from their players? Do they give you like previous data?
Yeah, we're helping them out. They're giving us data and what they have, and then we're just trying to find patterns in it.
And then are you looking for help them with the draft too? Or trades?
I would say that team building is one of the objectives, yeah.
All right, excellent, Eddie, thanks for coming on the podcast. This is so interesting, all the different things, and who knows what's behind the scenes on all this stuff is very interesting.
Thank you very much, James.
Thanks, Eddie.
Bye.